This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is for promotional purposes, is not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Hello, and welcome to Janus Henderson Investors' Big 5-0 mini-series podcast, aiming to help those who have reached the Big 5-0 or are nearly there and are perhaps realizing that they need to start planning and investing for retirement. As life expectancies grow and the generosity of traditional workplace schemes are dialed back, maximizing our pension provisions has never been more important to living our best golden years. So it's important to start your retirement planning now. It's got to be better than waiting for the big 6-0 no when you realize it's too late. Throughout the series, we're going to talk to a mixture of retirees, financial advisors, and investors to find out why it's essential to start saving through your pension as early as possible, how easy it is to get started with one, the different options you have available, and why investment trusts could be a great way to invest for your future. In this first episode, we are going to speak to three retirees to find out about their experiences from planning to saving, how this impacted their retirement, and the lessons they learned along the way. So I'd like to welcome onto the podcast Richard Arkell, Mike Wilson, and Gordon Longfellow. Okay, so shall we start by getting a little bit of background on each of you? Richard, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Well, I am age 72, which I think is relevant to this morning's discussion, as I've had to live through at least partway through this issue. I'm married. I have three grown-up daughters, and between them, they have produced six grandchildren, aged 15 down to one. So yes, it's all about me and my family situation.
My name is Mike Wilson. I'm a 62-year-old man who's married to my wife Jill. We have no children. And prior to my recent retirement, I used to work for a financial services company, and I used to sell products to professional investors. Other than that, I'm straightforward.
I'm Gordon Longfellow. I live with my lovely wife and one grown-up son. I'm 76, I think, at the moment.
What do you enjoy doing in your spare time, Gordon?
I'm involved in a rugby club I used to play for. Unfortunately, I don't play any longer, but I'm heavily involved as a treasurer, and bar chairman, and various other roles that keeps me quite busy.
And what about yourselves, Mike and Richard? What did you see yourselves doing in retirement?
Yeah, you speak to a lot of people about retirement plans, and everyone asks you that question as you approach retirement: what are you going to do? And I thought my retirement would be doing nothing and watching rubbish TV or something like that. But actually, it's been very busy, and I did have a number of plans that I wanted to do. And my real passion is actually taking financial services into the schools, because I am a firm believer that too many children are leaving school with no knowledge and experience of money and the planning of money.
Yes, I still chair a charity, which probably takes up one day a week. But apart from that, I enjoy sailing, skiing. I'm still active playing tennis, doing other outdoor activities, and of course, spend as much time as I can with my family.
Okay, so well, let's get into the retirement kind of questions, really. Do you remember the sort of the age and the time in your life that you started thinking about retirement?
So I think I was 58, and I was invited to take early retirement. Things were moving on, people coming and going, reorganization. So So I did.
That's it's an interesting question, because I do recall I started work at 18. I didn't go to university. I started work at 18, and I do remember being approached by some insurance salesman looking to sell me a pension as an 18-year-old and promising me to be able to become a millionaire if I were to just save on a regular basis for a long time. What I was good at was at making provision, at saving money. It wasn't necessarily pension saving, but I was very good at putting money away, and that was an important part of my particular retirement journey, was having that discipline to regularly put money away. And then in terms of actual retirement provision, you get various pension schemes with the jobs that you have. And over time, I came to realize that would cover me to a certain extent. But when you recognize that the average pension scheme in this country is worth about 30-something thousand pounds, you realize that's not going to be enough. And so I then, as I got into my financial services career, started to make provisions, both in terms of pension, but also in terms of, other tax-free saving schemes like ISAs or PEPs, as they used to be when they started, which I thought went hand in hand with pensions as a way of making provision for the retirement years.
Well, I think there is a watershed when this happens. For me, it was, as a partner with a major firm, I was probably in my late 40s and early 50s, I was probably working 6.5 days a week. And I was also beginning to get myself, my head above water financially, because, my children were off the books, as it were. So I had no more, I paid off the mortgages. So our financial situation, from having been stretched, was becoming unstretched and improving. And I was at a stage where I could begin to think that I could afford to retire. And that for me happened in my early 50s.
Okay, so you found that 50 was quite a critical age. Actually, this was a time that you started thinking about retirement.
Yes, I think for me was, I was beginning to realise that I didn't particularly want to go on working 6 days a week anymore. I wanted to begin to have a view of how I could wind down towards retirement.
Interesting. Okay.
50 is one of those ages that starts to just start you thinking. You're probably looking forward a decade or so to retirement, probably asking the question, when can I retire? Can I retire early? Do I want to retire early? Or in fact, do I want to just keep working? But most people, and I am the same, want to try and retire earlier or as early as they possibly can. And so, yeah, I would say somewhere around the 50 mark, you're starting to look forward to what you're gonna do. Even in your career at 50, you're starting to look very old, particularly in the job that I did. And so you're mindful that, the young pups will be snapping at your heels, and either you'll be pensioned off or you can jump ship a little bit early if possible. So it starts the juices flowing.
I suppose I was fortunate enough that KPMG had a scheme that clicked in at 55, which enabled me to have a lump of money at that age. And it coincided, I also wanted to go off and do some sailing. So we, part of the plan was to spend the between 55 and 65, really, as much time cruising around the world as I could, as well as still earning some money.
In terms of retirement, did you have an idea of how you wanted to live, or perhaps did you have any goals that you'd thought of for that age?
I wasn't thinking of retiring at 50. And it was just, and as age is now, it's just a number to me. No, I was expecting to retire. I think I can't remember now. I was 65 was probably the time men retired in those days. Although I think it was beginning to come down. But anyway, it 60, early 60s, I suppose. My wife was a teacher, and she wouldn't be leaving. Until after I retired. We're not big planners, we didn't have any visions of what we might be doing, any big things that we wanted to do.
Yeah, I'm a saddo from that perspective. So I actually sat down and did a very detailed budget, and I wrote down what I thought I would need in retirement in terms of an annual net salary, and then from that you can, you know, work out the sort of funds that you're going to need to hopefully provide that, the number of provisos in there. And so, yes, I went through that exercise and looked back at what savings I had and what my schemes were, to see if that was going to be possible. And, you know, when you make that list, it includes things like the water bill and the gas bill, and but it also includes things like Christmas presents and flat tires and the occasional ad hoc gift to a nephew or a niece who's in dire straits. And often in budgeting, all those things go out the window. You don't even think about that. You know, I've seen that so many times. So I tried to include life, you know, in there as well. So I had have a budget in there for holidays, for example, an actual budget, you know, and that kind of thing was very important to me.
Well, I suppose that comes into trying to work out what you're going to need come retirement, how much money you're going to need, and that is a very tricky one. I mean, you can work out roughly what your living costs are going to be, but basically when you retire, your outgoings, because you've probably paid off your mortgage, as I was saying, no more school fees or university fees, so your outgoings do go down. And you can work out very roughly what those are going to be. You can also work out what your income is going to be over the next, you know, however many years. You know, your state pension, and the difference between your outgoings and your state pension is how much money you're going to need basically to fulfill your lifestyle. But the big two unknowns are inflation and how long you're going to live. For me, my grandparents lived until they were 72. My parents lived until they were 90. I don't think that necessarily, I hope, means that I'm going to live till after I'm 100. I mean, the difficulty is you don't really know how long you're going to live, so how much money you're going to need in retirement. It's a very tricky one.
Okay, and what was the pension that you had at KPMG?
Well, as a partner, we didn't have a pension scheme as such. We had to make our own provision. It was part of our partnership deed that we had to contribute at least 17.5% of our earnings into a pension every year, because they didn't want to get left with partners who couldn't afford to retire, basically. So we had a degree of compulsion, which actually stood me in good store, as it were, because it forced me to save when earlier in my career, when otherwise I probably wouldn't have been my priority.
Did you also find, I mean, I'm assuming in your 50s, those were your kind of peak earning years. Did you maximize your contributions and really sort of focus on reducing your pensions at that age?
Yeah, it's interesting. In my case, there wasn't my maximum earning period. I could have mentioned a little period of redundancy in the middle of there. And that's one of the things that's life, right? Redundancy happens. And so, you know, one of the messages probably from my experience is don't make assumptions. Don't assume you're going to be earning at the level you've always earned at. Don't assume you're going to have a job. Life gets in the way, you know, and like a lot of people, I was made redundant from a job that I loved and I earned very well at, and got back into the market some 2.5 years later at a lower level. So whilst I earned okay, it wasn't my maximum earning period. Having said that, you know, you are moving to a goal. You know, I had 62 as my retirement age goal, which I've achieved, and having that in my mind's eye, yes, you know, you do start to increase the flow of money towards that goal.
Was that a similar experience for you, Gordon?
So I didn't really think about pension. One of the things about working for Leeds Perm and Halifax is that we had a, I think it's called a defined benefits pension in those days. So assuming I remained a good guy, my pension and my pension life was reasonably secure. So I didn't really need to. These days, obviously, you guys have to worry about your pension and how you're going to generate income for whatever standard of living you're hoping to get. So you've got to worry about it from basically the day you start working, I think. But I didn't. So there was no pressure, really, because I could see that the pension was going to be, as I say, if I left as a good leaver, the pension was going to be more than adequate for what we needed to live in retirement.
Okay, so because you were on a defined benefit pension, you didn't have to think about the types of investments that were in it. And at the end of it, you knew there was this promise of a certain amount of income in retirement. Were you given a lot of information about the plan?
In those days, the sort of access to information was not through apps and screens and things like that. It was all paper type, paper stuff. So the information wasn't obviously readily available, although you could get information from personnel, human resources. Nothing came to be thought about really until somebody said, came along to the office one morning and said, you know, we've talked about early retirement before, well, now's the time. And then information started coming about, okay, well, what does that actually mean? Because you've got to think that not everybody would have access to the same mix of pension, because if you're leaving as a good leaver, then that was different from somebody who was leaving who was being invited to leave for different reasons. So you then got the information, and then you decided, well, I want this mix of lump sum and ongoing pension.
So planning all of this by yourself can be quite a daunting task. So I'm interested to know, did you seek financial advice, or did you feel like you had enough knowledge to do that planning yourself? Shall we start with you, Mike?
You know, financial advice from professional advisors, I have taken that in a number of forms for a lot of years. My father-in-law, for example, is a financial advisor. His career was as an IFA, an independent financial advisor. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that, you know, he had offered advice all the way through my life pretty much. And so in one respect, you know, I've been offered advice in one form or another throughout my career. And, you know, I've taken that on board, rejected what I didn't want to do and accepted what I thought would be useful, and then come to my own decisions based on, you know, my knowledge and what I can see in the market.
How about you, Gordon? Did you seek financial advice?
Well, I, at that time, I had a connection with a financial advisor, we had a few chats and meetings to decide what we were going to do with it. And we really wanted, again, not being overly ambitious about risk of the capital. We're fairly conservative in terms of risk and capital, so we ended up with a mix of keeping cash, basically, or easy access to cash anyway, and investments in the stock market in terms of funds rather than individual companies.
So, I mean, from my perspective, and because of my age, I had a very rare beast called a defined benefit pension scheme from one of my companies. Which really don't exist. Well, they exist, but you won't be offered a new one these days. They're very expensive. And I discovered that having left the company, it had grown significantly.
I'm just going to interrupt you. Can you just describe to our listeners what a defined benefit scheme is?
Defined benefit scheme is a scheme where you save through your company, or ordinarily, on a regular basis. They take it from your salary ordinarily. It's just part of your benefit scheme. And it builds up and is designed in such a manner that in those days, if you worked 40 years of what was expected to be a 60-year career, you would get two-thirds of your final salary. Your final salary is defined as the average of your last 3 years working. And so your salary was defined by your benefits, by your salary. And that was kind of guaranteed. And that's why they don't exist today, because the company are on the line for that, to supply that and fund it in all circumstances. And they prove very expensive. And I also have a defined contribution scheme, and that is the same basis as a company scheme, but instead of your pension being defined by your salary, your pension is defined by the amount of contribution, the size of your fund when you get to retirement. So in those circumstances, I had both, and in those circumstances, what I discovered was that I was able to take my defined benefit scheme as a cash payment, transfer it out into what's called a self-invested personal pension, a SIP. And these are becoming very popular these days with pension freedoms, and allows you to put all of your pension schemes into one single scheme and have it in one place, which makes it very convenient. And that was very productive for me as well, because of the, I won't get technical here, but the nature of interest rates, you know, the amount of cash the company were prepared to pay me was much bigger than I thought. And so I consolidated it really all together into a single SIP, self-invested personal pension. And that allowed me to manage the investments much easier. I've always managed the pension from that perspective. And I chose my own investments and fortunately watched them grow through to retirement. That also helped me in my planning, Marcus, because it allowed me to kind of, you know, change the nature of some of the investments as I approached retirement, you know, perhaps taking a little bit of the risk off the table, maybe increasing the cash a little bit, that kind of thing gave me a lot of flexibility. And now alongside that, I mentioned earlier on ISAs, alongside that, of course, I had ISAs, which are different, but in my mind's eye, probably are also a part of pension planning. And so I've been saving into those regularly as well and managing them alongside my SIP.
Yes, and of course, life expectancies are improving all the time, which means people are very likely to be retired for longer than they are today. So it's definitely worth considering how many years you might need to plan for. Did you feel like you got the sort of retirement that you wanted, that you're comfortable, you're financially comfortable in the way that you had envisaged?
Yes, I think we are. It's worked fine for us. We'd be comfortably off, as you describe. We don't have any large financial ambitions to talk about here. Helping children, helping grandchildren, things like that. So we're able to do that to a degree. So we're okay.
Then I think your question then is going on to ask, what do I want to spend money on? Well, pandemic permitting, we want to travel. We want lump sums to renew our cars every now and again. But otherwise, it's a fairly normal ongoing pattern of spending. And we don't, we probably will be downsizing our house at some point. So we live in a 5-bedroom house on a large plot at the moment, 4 acres, which at some point we will want to downsize. But we will probably be releasing money at that point rather than spending it. But we do want to continue to enjoy traveling and spending money on skiing and holidays and things like that.
Okay, then. Looking back, what advice would you give yourself at the age of 50, now knowing what you know? Would you have done anything differently?
When I talk to young people about money, which I do anyway, it's just something I do in a restaurant or whatever, I often say to them, you know, I wish I'd met myself when I was 18, because I was saving money at 18 and putting it all into the Halifax, which earned me, in those days, earned me something. Today will earn you nothing. But I wish I'd met me, who said, don't do that. You know, you instead put that money to work, put it at risk, put it in investments, to let it grow. Instead, I didn't do that. And I just had lots of cash building up, which was great. But it could have done so much better. So I guess I would have started earlier, which is quite a strong theme for retirement planning. You know, you cannot start early enough. You know, as I was thinking about this chat this morning, Marcus, I went onto the HSBC website, and they have a thing there called an investment calculator. And you can just throw in some numbers there and see, you know, what £100 a month will deliver over a period of time, and there's various different layers of risk, and you know that will affect it greatly. All sorts of things that affect it, good stock market conditions or not so good. And so I put in £100 a month, and I put it in at high risk, not very high risk, but high risk, and I put in £100 a month over 10 years, and it's going to yield me £18,100 over 10 years. I then put in 30 years, so do the same amount of money, but for a substantially longer period of time. And the number that came out wasn't 18,100, it was £120,000. So time is so important in making provision for your retirement. Can't start early enough would be my message.
Well, I suppose one thing I would say is that I'm quite glad I did effectively retire at the age of, from my 6.5 days a week, I retired at the age of 55. I think, you know, there's various statistics about the longer you work, particularly if you're working hard and, you know, in a stressful job, your life expectancy probably does decline if you go on working at that pace much beyond 55. For me, scaling it down worked extremely well, and I would certainly do the same thing again. And I would advise anybody else to put their health and well-being right at the top of their priorities, rather than working, you know, maximizing their financial situation till, say, they're 65 and then drop dead when they're 66. It's not a good plan.
And then in terms of your investments, were there any sort of mistakes you reckon you made that you would probably do differently?
I think I'm a funds type, for the serious money, I'm a funds type person as opposed to individual stocks. Individual stocks, you know, on as well as the Halifax, we laugh about the Halifax. I still see one or two people from the Halifax. In fact, one of my colleagues just sent me a text only a couple of days ago saying Halifax shares were up to 40-odd p or something, 48, 50, early 50s, low 50s they were. And then you reflect back on £13.50 and you think, if you know, there, but for whatever, I could have been much better off. But that's fun, and that's taking things for a bit of enjoyment. So, and again, I'm still doing that. So things generally are okay. Because on the other hand, I've, as well as the Halifax going that way, I did invest in Persimmon, for example, when they were very, very low price, and obviously they're. Whether you like Persimmon or not, depending on your views on the company and the individuals involved, the share price is obviously performing exceedingly well.
Okay. Any errors of judgment, perhaps, along the way?
Yeah, loads of mistakes along the way. And that's part of the learning process. I mean, I have made investments in my life that have gone to zero. Actually, I have had some, you know, have gone to zero. And that's not a good feeling. But you come out the other side of that a wiser investor, and you recognise that you can't get something for nothing. You know, if you're going to take a big risk, that risk may get caught, and you know, there are benefits to taking high risk, but there's also downsides, and that's part of the learning process. Because I've taken this collective approach, a lot of that has been dumbed down because, you know, I've got, you know, you diversify by geography and by asset class. You know, I'm going to buy small companies or larger companies. Asia operates differently to the UK as a market. So they're all, everything's moving in a different cycle. And, you know, just that diversity has taken away some of that risk. Even though they're all risk assets, it's diversified the risk away, and something will do well when another thing is doing badly, and that's tended to smooth the journey. But in my lifetime, yeah, I've bought lots of speculative things, and some have done fantastically well, and others have done fantastically badly. But I've always relied on the stock market. I've always trusted it over the long term. You know, like everyone in the financial crisis, and you know, I was around the market, you know, in 87 when the market fell 25% instantly. You know, and all of that is terribly shocking. But my advice would be, just stay invested and keep putting money into the marketplace. If the market falls, you'll buy at a lower level and it will recover.
Well, I suppose I've made three big mistakes in my investing career. One was with Equitable Life. Another was investing in Rolls-Royce because I was attracted by the name and thought it was a good bet. And the other was investing in BP. You know, and I don't think I could actually have foreseen any of them going badly wrong. So it just comes back to this point about diversification, not putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, diversifying in every way and thinking seriously about sustainability what is going to grow sustainably in the future.
Well, if we were going to sort of summarize and you were going to give your top tip for those thinking about retirement at the age of 50, what would you say?
Well, I think these days you've got to start early. It's no good thinking about it when you're 45. You've got to start as soon as you start working, and have it in your mind, probably all the time. It's something. If I was doing it again, I'd probably be, instead of doing the things I'm doing, I'd be worrying about where this pension's coming from and how we're going to replace a nice income with an equally nice retirement income.
Yeah, well, I would say approach the big 5-0. You know, congratulations, it's around the corner. So start thinking about it. Do your budget and do it properly. Don't hold back. Don't think I can make do. Write everything down, and then you know what you're aiming for. Diversify your assets. Keep saving. And I would say. Plan for the long term, because retirement these days, all things being equal, is going to be a long period of time.
I would say start saving as early as you can afford, or even earlier than you can actually afford it. I mean, particularly, you know, in middle age, when you've got so many other, you know, if you've got a family and children and housing and school fees and everything, it is very difficult to set some money aside for a pension, but the earlier you start, the better. And I would actually say to start saving at 50 is too late. Start as early as you can. Don't forget, you know, something. If you started a pension, you know, an employment when you were 20, even if it's only £1 a week, you'd be surprised. By the time you're 50, it's actually a big pension pot. So don't forget those early little pension pots that you might have accumulated. They could become worth a lot of money. I suppose those are my top tips, really.
Well, I think that's certainly something for our listeners to think about. Thanks, Richard. And with those final top tips, we're brought to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank all of my guests, Richard Arkell, Mike Wilson, and Gordon Longfellow, for their time today. It's clear that putting some plans in place and some savings aside will certainly make a difference to the quality of our retirement, but also that it's not too late to start planning, even for those who have reached the big 50 or are nearly there. In our next episode, we will take a look at how to shift your retirement plans from the thinking phase to the doing something about it phase. In the meantime, you can find further information on planning for your financial future via our dedicated retirement planning hub at janicehenderson.com/retirement gateway. Until then, goodbye. This is important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved, and you may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and annual report of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend on an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for regulatory record-keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janice Henderson Investors. Janice Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janice Capital International Limited, registration number 3594615, Henderson Global Investors Limited, registration number 906355, Henderson Investment Funds Limited, registration number 2678531, Henderson Equity Partners Limited, registration number 2606646, each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, as well as Henderson Management S.A., registration number B22848 at De Rue de Bitburg, L1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janice Henderson, Janice Henderson, Intech, Velocity Shares, Knowledge Shared, Knowledge.Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janice Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janice Henderson Group PLC.